to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we are here with New Paradigms for a New World every Sunday from 7 a.m., 7 p.m., 1 a.m. Monday morning. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We link to our guest's website or sites if we're able to do that. And we also encourage you to check out the audio file. When you listen to this program on the radio broadcast Sunday morning or evening at 7 a.m. or p.m. Pacific time or 1 a.m. Monday morning Pacific time, you may or may not hear the entire interview because we're only able to play so many minutes of the actual interview. So then you have to go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, click on the play button associated with that particular interview, and listen to the whole thing. Get all the information. Then click on the link to their website. Go there. See what works and see what resonates with you. We encourage you to do that. I have to say that I am thrilled to have as my returning guests, as we are getting very close to that all-important date, if you will, for me anyway, the first weekend in September of 2007. We began this program, this specific program. And so we're going to be celebrating our 10th anniversary on, of all days, the 3rd. This year, it'll be the 3rd of September 2017, 10 years producing this radio program. And believe it or not, I've only had to replay one show. I was seriously ill. We were doing the show live, and I couldn't make it down the hill. Couldn't even roll down the hill. But I'm very excited about having as my guests on this program, and we had them on the day before my 57th birthday here on the program, as we were on vacation in December of 2016. We had Nayaswami Jyotish and Devi. They are the spiritual directors of Ananda Village, and thank you so much for sharing with us. You have a very special message we're going to get into regarding the Choose the Light 2017 West Coast Tour, and thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It's a joy to be with you again.
And congratulations on your 10th anniversary. That's quite an accomplishment.
You know, I do the math, and that's over 500 programs.
Yes. And you know, I myself have an important anniversary coming up next week on the 26th of April. I will celebrate the 50th anniversary of my first meeting with Swami Kriyananda. Started the direction of my life. So that's a big one for me.
Your listeners might not. Swami Kriyananda is the founder of Ananda Worldwide and our lifelong teacher. So Jyotish is celebrating the 50th anniversary of his meeting, which is quite a life milestone.
And we've been privileged to have him on our program, Swami Kriyananda, a few years back before his passing. He was the last living teaching disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, author of The Autobiography of a Yogi, which was my metaphysical primer back when I started searching and at the age of 17. A lot of sevens in there. Very interesting. And it's interesting the path that I have traveled over the last 30 plus years, as far as my search in that respect. And I have met some incredible people. I've been to a couple of the shrines, if you will, or meeting places and worship centers for Paramahansa. I've met not only yourselves at Ananda Village north of Nevada City in Northern California, but also have met another gentleman whose guru was a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, and he spends half of his time here in the hills of Montecito at his monastery as well, Swami Vididishananda. And so somehow, for whatever reasons that I haven't fully comprehended yet, I am constantly drawn back to these teachings, to this philosophy, to this way of life. There's so much here. But before we get into what that is all about, share with us, give us the details of this this journey that you two are on in regards to Choose the Light 2017.
Okay, Richard. Well, thanks for having us on and thanks for asking. You know, it seems in the world right now, whatever your political persuasion, and there certainly are valid perspectives on all sides of American politics, but I think when you read the I just saw an article yesterday on the internet news that Americans have a higher rate of anxiety and depression now than ever before. And when you look at global news and there's confusion in the world now. There's forces of contraction and expansion of world unity and world divisiveness. And so we are doing through Ananda Worldwide that Jyotish and I helped to lead, we're trying to really offer people positive alternatives. And one of them is this Choose the Light tour that we're doing on the West Coast of the U.S. And we've already done a major program in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have one coming up, a program next weekend, April 29th, in Los Angeles. And then we'll be doing future ones in June in Seattle and in July in Portland, Oregon. And if any of your listeners are interested, they can tune into these live streaming on, if they go to our main website, Ananda, ananda.org/events. They can find out how to tune into these live streaming. But essentially, the theme, as you mentioned, is Choose the Light. And it's offering people ways to expand their own positive energy, to develop their own inner strength, to deal with the challenges that life is placing before all of us right now, how to deal with stress, how to deal with divisiveness and hatred and violence, and how to find that place within us which has a broader perspective and able to see, to be a positive solution, to become a positive solution. And I'll let Jyotish talk a little bit about the Be the Change campaign that we're also launching through Ananda.
We've just launched a campaign because, as Davey was saying, you know, people are feeling anxious, but they also want to do something, and yet they don't know what to do. And so one of the things that we're suggesting is with our campaign of Be the Change, among other things, we're asking people to pledge a certain, those who meditate, doesn't matter the religion or non-religion or whatever, those who meditate, to pledge a certain amount of meditation toward peace and harmony in the world. And that allows a person to be an individual agent for producing wellness in the, over the planet. You know, it comes off of a statement of Gandhi's that if we want to change the world, we must first produce that change within our own selves, and then that will in turn help the change in the world. In fact, as soon as we change ourselves, we begin to change the world.
And if your listeners are interested in participating, they just need to go to meditationpledge.org, and you can pledge the number of minutes. If it's 2 minutes, if it's 200 minutes, it doesn't matter. But our goal is to get 1 million hours of meditation pledged by truth seekers all over the world, and to build a network of light unified everywhere. And so we invite your listeners to participate if they're interested. And we're very excited about this, and we've already gotten many. We launched this April 9th, this campaign, Be the Change, and we've already gotten tens of thousands of people responding. And so we invite your listeners to join us and be part of this Be the Change campaign.
Well, I know from my own experience, and I have to say, sadly, that it wasn't until about September of 2016, nearly a year ago, that I got sucked in. I was separate. I was separate from the whole thing, for the longest time. I just didn't care. And I don't even know what it was that just sucked me right in. And I started to get emotional and I started to pontificate and so forth. And one of the things that some would say, well, kind of hard not to get sucked in. I mean, goodness, you work for a news and information station. I said, well, yeah, but I've worked for news and information stations before, and I was able to stay detached. And for whatever reason, something magnetic drew me in. And I came to a couple of wonderful pivot points in the latter part of 2016 and the early part of 2017 that allowed me to let go of all of that. First of all, I turned off all of my news feeds on my phone, my tablet, and my computer. Turned them all off. And the only source of information, news and information I get, got and still get, is from the satirical, if you will, programs, humorous in nature, but still keeping everything in context. That allow me to laugh at it all, you might say that's my form of meditation for 15, 20 minutes, is to watch these programs, watch the diametrically opposed events happening, and then the humorous twist that they put on it, and then move forward and just kind of let it go and say, you know what, there isn't anything I can do here about that there. Okay, and it's kind of what you were just talking about as far as, you know, what Gandhi is saying and so on and so forth. And it's interesting, like Buddha, Gandhi, and Dalai Lama, Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda taught universal spiritual truths and practical ways to live every day with a higher consciousness. And it brought to mind my interview with Jacques Fresco, who is a visionary, who is a futurist, who has a group and a architectural design for the civilization of the future called the Venus Project. And he talks about the fact that there are three main pillars to his new civilization. And I asked him about all of this, and obviously in the interview, but I said, I want this now. This sounds great. Do you think this will happen in your lifetime or mine? And he says, well, it probably will not happen in mine. He was in his late 90s at the time.
Wow.
And he says, and it probably won't happen in yours. And I said, well, why not? Well, it kind of goes to the core of what Yogananda was all about, and that is in terms of raising the consciousness, that the consciousness of the planet and its people is not in a place yet to accept some of these new concepts. But what's interesting, and I want the two of you to dive into this if you would, what Paramahansa Yogananda and what the teachings the philosophy is old. It's not new. It's not something that someone just conjured up out of nothing. And quite honestly, even though the book, for example, Autobiography, is a rather thick book, the message is very, very simple, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. The primary message of that book, and in fact, the primary message of all great spiritual literature and scripture, is that it's our own consciousness that produces the happiness or unhappiness that we feel in our lives. It's our own way of reacting to events, whether positive or negative, that makes us feel positive or negative. And the great spiritual teachings basically have the same message, which is regardless of the method that you use, you have to begin to work on your own consciousness. Swami Kriyananda had a beautiful image of this that he used in his book on education, and that image was one of specific gravity. So if you take water as as neutral specific gravity. If you have something lighter than water, it's going to float. So if you have a bobber or a raft, it's going to float on the surface of the water. If you have something that's more dense, lead weight, it's going to sink to the bottom. And so depending on your own level of consciousness, basically how expansive, how inclusive you are. So the broader and more inclusive and more uplifted your consciousness, it's going to float higher or float on the surface of the water, and your specific gravity will be higher. And if it's too dense, it's going to sink. Well, that's on an individual level, but also on a planetary level. We have a certain specific gravity, and until we change that specific gravity, it doesn't do any good to try to change society, because it will automatically sink back to its level of specific gravity. And so the real change has to be the change of our consciousness to make it more expansive, more altruistic, more inclusive, more for us, it would also be more spiritual, not necessarily religious, but spiritual. And I would equate the expansion of consciousness with becoming more spiritual.
And as you said, Richard, this isn't something that Yogananda invented, or any the Dalai Lama, any of the contemporary great spiritual figures. The teachings of working with consciousness, expanding and raising consciousness, is the science of yoga, which originated in India, but it's millennium old, thousands and thousands of years. Really, no starting date is known. And if you look at there's a mystical tradition in every religion in the world. With Christianity, there are the mystical saints. With Judaism, there's the Kabbalah tradition. With Muslim religion, there's the Sufi tradition. But all of these are contemplative forms of interiorizing the consciousness and expanding it to towards its full potential. And so it's an old tradition, but it's being reintroduced. This was one of Yogananda's great contributions. He came to the West from India in 1920, and brought this ancient tradition and made it applicable for the modern Western mind. It was a tremendous thing that he did. He taught all over the country to every kind of social club and group and auditorium, and he lectured to hundreds of thousands of people. But really, what we're talking about, and there's recent modern studies are proving this, that if you have people meditating who are trying to expand their consciousness, it changes the environment around them, not just in, quote, spiritual ways, but they're doing statistical research showing that in areas where a certain percentage of the population is meditating, and it can be a very small percent, 1% or 2%, the crime rate goes down, material success or financial stability increases. Even the weather patterns seem to improve in that small local niche. So it really, the process of meditation is tremendously beneficial, not only to the person who practices it, but to the people around them and to the environment around them. And I want to offer to your listeners, if they'd like to get started in meditation, Ananda has tremendous resources through the Internet. If you go to ananda.org, we have a lot of free introductions to meditation. We have wonderful online classes that you can take. Jyotish has written a wonderful book that sold 250,000 copies, just simply called How to Meditate. And you can find all of these are available if you go to ananda.org. But mainly we want to encourage your listeners. People often say, oh, well, I don't have the time to meditate, and yet I want to find peace of mind. I want to be more calm. It doesn't take a lot of time. Even if you meditated for 5 minutes a day, I really offer my personal guarantee that you would see a change in yourself, much for the better. And so, as you were saying, Richard, the yoga and meditation is an ancient science, but really one that I think for some reason is striking a very deep chord, particularly in the West today. And I think you're aware, but the United Nations declared last year, through the instigation of the Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, the United Nations declared an International Day of Yoga. And now Ananda is part of the team working with the UN, and we're hoping to declare an International Day of Meditation. So you can see that there's a broad interest in this.
I remember many, many years ago, probably in the late 80s, and I was working for a Christian station at the time, and there was a rather prominent televangelist by the name of,
Billy Graham?
No, wasn't him, but it was, I'm trying to remember his name now, Robert. Or Roberts, name is not coming to mind. In any event,
yeah.
And basically there was a hurricane headed for their part of the country, and they basically went on television and said, "We're going to pray that this hurricane doesn't hit." And they went through they did the prayer, and over the course of the next 12 to 24 hours, the hurricane shifted.
Mm.
And, cynics would argue, well, so what? It probably would have shifted anyway, whether they prayed or not.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know. You have no clue to the power of prayer. And honestly, it doesn't matter who's doing the praying. But I think one of the things that I find disheartening when it comes to prayer of that, prayer is when people, they make the statement that, God is on their side. That's the kind of prayer I have a problem with. It's one thing to, for example, to pray that this hurricane pass us by and not do damage and so on and so forth. But it's another to say, especially if you're dealing with issues of conflict, that God is on our side and we're going to defeat them. Well, but they're God's children too. What about them?
That's right.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with people saying God is on our side. I have a problem with them saying that God is not on their side.
Ah.
God's on every side.
Mm-hmm. Swami Kriyananda, who we mentioned, Ananda's founder, he was a composer as well, and he wrote a delightful, kind of a humor song called I, My, Me, Mine, and in it, it said, I quote the lyrics. A sailor from England replied to his foe, "The reason we win is we pray as we go." And then the opposite side says, "But we pray as well and just look at our dead." And then the first British sailor says, "Yes, but we pray in English," the Englishman said. So, it's just everyone thinks that God is on their side.
Yeah.
But as we've been saying, He's on all sides, and that's one of the problems in the world today, if the majority of the people don't yet see that he's as much in every expression of religion or culture or nationality or race, because God is all those things. He created them all, and how can He not love those children as much that He created in that way as the children He created in another way? So we're moving towards a new understanding as a human race, but it's not always an easy process, and I think we're in a difficult time right now where the forces of retrograde are kind of affirming themselves.
In fact,
just very briefly, one of the teachings of Yogananda is that we're in a changing age right now, where we're changing from an old understanding of the world as just being dense matter into an understanding of it as being made up of energy. And it's going on in all, it's science and religion and politics, everything. It's a universal shifting of understanding. But those who still hold on to the old way of thinking of everything being solid and separated are frightened and upset by this changing age, and therefore there's a reaction against it. That's where terrorism comes from, mm-hmm. and those people trying to push society back to what it was 1,000 years ago. So at any rate, it's an overreaction to the inability to accept change, and it's a temporary phase.
Yeah, I remember hearing also, you know, in terms of this whole, you know, God's on our side. Are you on God's side?
Yes.
You know? And that's where the dilemma really starts, because there are so many different philosophical perspectives on the planet today, going back hundreds or thousands of years. You start asking that question. Well, is this the right way? Is that the right way? And of course, each one says that theirs is not only the right way, it's the only way. And
yes.
And the teachings of Paramahansa have absolutely nothing to do with that.
Exactly, and go on.
Well, and it's right. And it's just one of those areas where, you know, I try to share with people. Look, you know, your position and your philosophical view of things is valid because it's yours. I mean, you know, I never want to take that away from someone.
That's right.
But you've really, Jyotish, you've, you know, codified what this program is all about in terms of looking for those new ways of living with these new paradigms, looking, you know, to create a new world that is beneficial, that is supportive, that is a place of thriving for all, not just a select few, and not leaving a select few out, but for all people. And you know, that's the challenge that we face today. And then I'm glad you said that, too, that what we're going through, in spite of the fact that it seems like it's been going on for a long time, in the grand scheme of things, even though I've only been around 57 years, that's a puff of smoke. If it's barely a puff of smoke in the grand scheme of things, in the universal perspective, that this is temporary. It's all temporary.
Right. Yeah. You know, in Yogananda's classic Autobiography of a Yogi, which, by the way, your listeners can, if they haven't read it or if they want to read it again, it's available through ananda.org as a free online book, so they can read it online.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a wonderful statement in there, very apropos to what we're talking about. He says, divine vision, meaning the consciousness of God, is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. And in those, you know, very few four words, what he's saying is that from any point that you choose to pick up reality, any person's perspective, that's valid. And but there's no limit. That's where people make their mistake. They say, okay, my way's valid, and that's the end of the circumference. But there's no end to that circumference. And the more people can understand that, the more they can enjoy the difference. The different cultures, the different religions and races and backgrounds. And you just see, Jyotish and I have had the great blessing of, in service to Yoganandaji, to travel all over the world and lecture to people throughout America, throughout Europe, throughout India, Southeast Asia, and we just, it's so beautiful to see how the divine is expressed differently all over the world, and yet it's the same. The values of God's consciousness are so simple, as you said earlier, Richard. It's just rooted in unconditional love and acceptance and inner peace and calmness and seeing behind the shifting, whatever's happening in the moment, and seeing that there's an eternal truth that exists beyond all that. So it's so important for people to see the potential of a unified vision of people and of reality.
Ananda Village, which my wife and I had the great pleasure of visiting, it was only for a few hours. We broke bread with you, the two of you, and a couple of other folks who showed us around the community, and we saw some wonderful things that certainly we are privileged here in Santa Barbara, where we live, to see on a fairly regular basis. A little concerned that the deer had disappeared, but then I was coming home one afternoon, driving into the driveway, and all of a sudden the deer came bounding down the hill and across the field, and I'm going, oh, thank God you're still here. I was really worried, you know. It's a wonderful place, and it gets at the foothill at the base of the Sierras, Sierra foothills, and it's north of Nevada City. The bridge you cross over, the Yuba River, which at one point I thought it was going to turn into an ocean with all the rains that you folks got in January and February. But it's a wonderful place to go to, in a manner of speaking, get away from it all. And as I mentioned earlier about shutting off all of my news feeds on my devices, and for that matter, avoiding the newscasts of a national nature, if I can, on television and the versions that we watch, I wonder, from your perspective, how important is it really to stay informed about this stuff, especially if you have the propensity, as apparently I do, so to get a little wound up over certain stories and so forth. It's wonderful to hear the wonderful stories of a dog that rescued this little child from this place, or a human being who, you know, helped to help this person, you know, quote unquote, get across the street or what have you. You know, the wonderful feel-good stories, you know, as it's sometimes said. But, you know, I just want to stay away from that other stuff, because I know this stuff happens. I know that man's inhumanity to man has been going on, and sadly will go on for some time to come. And I don't need to be reinforcing my brain, my psyche, if you will, about these details, you know. And it really kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, about if you want to see change, be the change. And to me, being the change means sort of, I don't know, does it mean disconnecting from some of this stuff?
Well, I think it would be very, very helpful. For one thing, we live in an extremely restless age right now. People multitasking and having many devices and vices, I might add, but many devices going on at the same time and constantly checking things. All that produces is a great deal of nervousness. I wouldn't say that a person needs to feel at all guilty about having a basic understanding of the things that are happening in the world, but just a basic understanding is plenty. You know, I think if a person check the news once a week, that would be plenty. It would, if anything that is really important and really an emergency, the world will not hold back in letting you know directly. So you don't have to check every 5 minutes to make sure that a butterfly in Philadelphia didn't flap its wings and now you're going to be in trouble. You know, it just produces nervousness and anxiety. So I would say a balance, a little bit of keeping in touch is fine, but too much and you just get embroiled in the anxiety. Let's face it, most media survives by playing on negative emotions. They play on fear, they play on separation, they play on jealousy. And so if you think of mass media by and large as selling them their subscriptions by playing on negative emotions, then just ask the question, do I want to be a recipient of all that negativity? And I think the answer is no. I think a person is much happier staying away from that, and yet having a little bit of connection so that you don't seem like you're unable to carry on a conversation with somebody else.
Indeed, indeed. If you have just joined us, we're talking with the spiritual directors of Ananda Village, and they are Nayaswami Jyotish and Devi, and we're going to continue our conversation. We're also going to find out more about, and we're going to dive into this subject of what is this form of yoga that actually can assist you in this process of transformation of I guess the right phrase would also be of raising your own personal and individual consciousness. And we'll talk more about that as we return from this short break here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you so much for staying with us here on the program and sharing this time with my special guests here. I had the great pleasure of being in their presence and interviewing them for a program that aired back on the 25th of June, 2017. And we certainly would encourage you to go and listen to that interview. And I'm torn because as much as I enjoyed speaking to the two of you and conversing in that context for what seemed like so too short a time, at least this time I'm not sitting there holding the recording device, you know, a little more relaxed in that regard. And yet I remember listening to that interview myself and going, why am I whispering? Just something about the mood in that room, I guess, and so forth, where I was such soft tones and just trying to not be too loud, don't want to wake anybody up or disturb anybody's meditation.
You were visiting our meditation retreat, The Expanding Light, when we had that interview, and people do. They come from all over the world and spend time there. And many of them have, you know, we have daily sadhanas, we have vegetarian meals, we have a beautiful environment, but it gives people a relaxed space where they can get in touch with their own selves. And many, many people come there during a time of transition in their life when they need to make a change in whatever, in a relationship or a job, or they've lost someone they love. Many people come there and they're able to find that sense of inner stability and peace. And from that, they're able to see more clearly the direction they should go. So I don't know that you needed to whisper, but I think you were feeling the peace of the place.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to say, too, that I've always made the comment, especially when it came to trying new food and drink, that I'll always try something once and sometimes twice. And what we had for lunch that particular afternoon was absolutely delicious and really enjoyed it. And then, of course, the tour of the village, which has been around for, well, as of next year, 50 years.
69, actually. So 2019, we'll have our 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're open every day of the year for visitors. In fact, every April for the whole month, we have the beautiful gardens at what we call Crystal Hermitage, and we call it Springtime at Ananda. And every autumn, we plant over 16,000 tulips, and then they come into bloom in April. And it's open to the public all throughout the month, and we have thousands of visitors. Last year, I think there were between 8,000 and 9,000 people who came. Mm. And this year, depending on the rain, we'll see what the numbers turn out. But we were just written up in Via Magazine as one of the top 13 gardens on the West Coast. So we were very happy to receive that recognition. But, you know, it's helpful for people when they want to find more peace and calmness within to be in a beautiful natural environment. I just saw an article that the Japanese have a practice which they call forest bathing, where they simply walk in a forest and try to bathe themselves in the vitality and the strength that the forest offers. Mm. You know, it's a universal experience to be around natural beauty and to find it uplifting.
I couldn't agree with you more. As I say, we are quite fortunate where we happen to live. When we bring people up and show them the space that we reside in, the little two-room cottage with our two dogs and six cats and soon chickens, and then, of course, all of the wild animals that happen to come across our path there. We've had bears, and of course we had wild turkeys and deer, and my wife has heard, I haven't seen, but she says she's heard and seen bobcats, little ones, and this kind of thing. And I have to say that I grew up, I was born and raised in Phoenix and in the suburbs of Phoenix, Arizona, you know, in the middle of the city, and you know, had the only nature we had was our backyard with the pine trees that my dad planted and the fact that we had grass, you know. we made a trip or two to the forest. We went up north to Flagstaff and the surrounding areas, visited the Grand Canyon, those kinds of things. But it's not quite the same when you have it right there at your doorstep. And there is a perspective. I think that this is one of the things you folks, I'm sure, have learned or have experienced, that there is a perspective that you get the longer that you immerse yourself or bathe yourself in the forest.
There certainly is. You know, we had a friend who used to talk. He was a wonderful fellow, but he used to talk in terms of some people work on rabbit time and others on elephant time. And too much of modern life is running on rabbit time. You get out into the forest and out into nature, you're back on elephant time, where the longer rhythms and more universal consciousness is easier to get in touch with. And the same is true in meditation, that when you get in touch with your own self, you get in touch with longer rhythms and universal rhythms, and you see yourself as an agent of love or an agent of joy or peace or harmony. And through that calmness and being in touch with those longer rhythms, then you're just uplifted naturally and more harmonious. Our modern age and modern cities are not based on trying to produce the greatest happiness. They're based on material considerations and generally considerations of greed and wealth and income. But it's important for us to fight back internally against those outer pressures that are unbalanced.
And, you know, as you were saying earlier, Richard, the practice of yoga and the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, particularly because they're the ones we're most familiar with and that we've practiced all of our adult life, and the practice of Kriya Yoga, which is mentioned in Autobiography of a Yogi, this, which is the highest meditation technique that Yogananda brought, these are people need to understand that really the purpose behind all of it is enhanced well-being on every level, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. So the practice of meditation is not something kind of woo-woo, far away, withdraw, live in a cave, but the practice of meditation is to improve the quality of your daily life. And Ananda Village, that where we met you in person and where we had lunch together and that you visited, it's trying to demonstrate how to bring meditation into daily life. So as you saw, we have houses, we have families and schools, children, businesses, a market, meditation retreat, beautiful gardens, health clinic, all of these things. But all of the people involved with them practice meditation, whether they're a businessman or a mother or a teacher or a gardener, doctor, whatever it might be. And so people really need to understand that, as I said, that the practice of meditation enhances our life and our health. One of our members who's a doctor said he's and runs a health clinic in the area. He said people who practice meditation are 10 years younger biologically than their chronological age. So that's a nice goal and to strive for. So we really we encourage people so sincerely and earnestly on our part, because we've known what it's done for us personally and for thousands of people that we know who practice meditation, how your life, it improves your life. And Kriya Yoga is an advanced technique of meditation, but available to everyone who wants to take the time to learn it.
I think one of the things that struck me in reading Otto Paramahansa's book was his reference to meditation, his reference to Teresa of Avila, I believe it was, who said that God is amongst the pots and the pans. So no matter what you are doing, okay, God is there. I find that we talk about this on a fairly regular basis on this program in terms of people searching for and trying to find their purpose in life, trying to get into that space, if you will, of connecting with the universal power, to connect with God and so forth, and talking about getting into what is especially referred to in sports as getting into the zone. And that time becomes irrelevant. You're not even aware of time anymore. You're just into whatever it is that you're doing, and before you know it, you know. And this is not playing video games or computer games. This is doing something that is truly meaningful. I mean, I could probably. I was just sitting here thinking about when we're going to get our chickens again, and going out there and just sitting with them. Inside the area, just sitting with them as they walk around and they do their little cooing and all this kind of stuff. And before, when we had them, they would I would be sitting on this stool inside the chicken run and they'd jump up on my knee. I wasn't trying to get them to do anything. I just was sitting there enjoying being around them. And what's really kind of sad is that so many people who do live in cities, in urban areas, they miss out on these kinds of things for whatever the reasons are. But the fact of the matter is the opportunities are there if you really want to avail yourselves of that. I want to talk a little bit about, I know that Paramahansa had talked about these communities, and Ananda Village is actually one of the first of these brotherhood communities. Can you tell us about the formation and the foundation of this that under Swami Kriyananda?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. You know, what Yogananda was talking about is that we've been talking, and your whole show is about finding your aspiration and trying to live according to your ideals. And what Yogananda observed and then very strongly recommended is the fact that if you're trying to live according to a set of ideals, it's much easier if you gather together with other people who are doing the same thing. And it's nothing startling. I mean, artists have gathered together, athletes gather together, people tend to gather together with others who they share something with. But here where we share ideals, to gather together. Well, if you extend that gathering together, then why not live together? And so he said those of high ideals should gather together in little communities. And he recommended living in nature and having a simpler lifestyle that didn't have so many outer demands on it, leaving you more time to meditate, to be connected with nature, as you were saying, to have a kind of a healthy lifestyle as opposed to being driven and driven and driven by the need for income. And so our community, Swami Kriyananda, almost uniquely among Yogananda's disciples, heard that message very, very strongly. And he dedicated his life in part to founding and helping embrace that vision of world brotherhood communities, as Yogananda called them. But they're intentional spiritual communities. So Ananda Village started nearly 50 years ago, as we've said. But then we've also started these communities in urban areas. We have one in Seattle, one in Portland, Oregon, Sacramento. Here, Ananda Village, we're starting just getting one started in Los Angeles. We have a big center in Assisi, Italy, for all of Europe. I missed Palo Alto. We have a center there. And then we have several centers and communities in India. So these world brotherhood communities where people gather together, they live in harmony, they live with their high ideals, and they bring all of those teachings, spiritual teachings that can be just philosophical, that bring them into everyday life so that these communities become a living laboratory to prove whether these nice-sounding philosophies work or not. And I can guarantee, after being involved in founding of most of them and over 50 years, that it not only works, it works in startlingly wonderful ways.
And, you know, it's important, too, for your listeners to know that you don't have to live in the country, though. I mean, as Jyotish was saying, our largest community is in a rural area, but then all these other communities we've mentioned are in urban areas. And so really the point is how to find the peace and joy and calmness within you wherever you are. Yogananda wrote a beautiful poem, one of the great pieces of spiritual literature, about the state of cosmic consciousness or samadhi. He wrote that while riding on the subway in New York. So it, you know, it helps to be in a lovely natural environment in a rural area, but it does. God can come to you wherever you are, in whatever walk of life you are. If you're a, you know, a bus driver or whatever it might be, a horse racer, a runway model, whatever we're doing in life, it does. There isn't one, as we were saying earlier in the show, there isn't one any one place on earth where God isn't. And so the trick of it is to find him in the moment, in your daily life, wherever you are. And Yogananda had a wonderful statement that I often call to mind. He said, "Life is a battle for joy. Every step of the way, may I fight to win that battle on the very spot where I now stand." So I want to encourage people everywhere. Don't just think you have to run away to the hills. Wherever you are, in the midst of driving your kids to the soccer games or fighting freeway traffic, whatever it might be, you can find a state of peace of mind wherever you are if you take up the practices that help you to develop it.
But it sure helps to have an ongoing practice of meditation that gets you centered first, so that then when you go into an environment that is constantly pulling you off of your center, you have that trunk and root system firmly established.
So we had a friend who was a meditator, who was a nurse in an emergency ward in a hospital in San Francisco. And she said she didn't have any place to meditate, so she'd go into her car in the parking lot at lunchtime, eat her lunch and meditate, and then come back and deal with all the, you know, crises, emergencies that were coming in. And all of her colleagues and coworkers said to her name was Laura, "Laura, how is it that you're so calm in the midst of all these crises?" And she didn't want to say, but she just said, "Well, I have a way of staying calm." But that's, you know, whatever crises come in our life and what life is without them. then we need to develop through meditation the ability to deal with them effectively.
Yeah. And they're out there, all different ways, different modalities, as I like to say, for doing just that. And we encourage people to investigate. Ananda Village is a place that, it's a wonderful sanctuary you can visit. And if I'm not mistaken, there's all, even an opportunity if you wanted to move there. Those opportunities are there.
Yes, they are there. So start with a visit and see yes. where it goes.
Start with the visit. Exactly, exactly. I know that for my wife and I, it would certainly be a wonderful place. The issues surrounding the different more earthly and mundane aspects still have to be dealt with. But again, I've also found it true, and especially in light of the way in which we experienced our transition here to Santa Barbara, the universe always seems to make a way. If that's where you're supposed to be, hey, you'll find yourself there in short order. I think that that's something for people to keep in mind as well. If that's what you really want to do and that's where you want to be, then put it out there and wait
exactly.
and see what happens.
And that's true of everything in our yeah. life, from finding yeah. the right partner for a relationship mm-hmm. or the right job or the right environment. We have to realize that there's a bigger picture and that we don't have to, kind of struggle and fight and push others away to get what we want. But what's meant to happen in our life, what's meant for us to have, it will come to us.
But we also have to put out energy. Yogananda had a beautiful principle. It really has helped me. He said, the stronger the energy that we put out, the stronger the field of magnetism we produce around ourselves, and that draws to us people, circumstances, events that are helpful for us to achieve our intentions.
This journey that the two of you are on right now, in terms of, Choose the Light 2017, the first of the processes, and in terms of really understanding that would be a wonderful choice to make, and it would certainly maybe simplify someone's life to some degree anyway. The light, that's a universal word, if you will. I mean, it has so many different definitions, especially from a spiritual or metaphysical or even spiritual perspective, certainly that word is used quite often. I mean, numerous times throughout all of the great ancient wisdom teachings. We need to seek the light, so yes, there's darkness, but that's only because there are these certain elements that are blocking the light. That's where the shadow is, because of something in your way. You can't see the light.
Yes, almost every religion has some form of candles or light on their altar or offering up light in some way. And those outer symbols are really symbolic of when we get centered in our own self, we actually see light in the forehead. And if we can concentrate on that light and, in fact, expand into it, feel that we are becoming that light or that light is us, then we become enlightened. And that sense of the outer symbol of that is present in all religions because it is a universal inner reality that people experience when they calm themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand, too, that it isn't just a physical light that we're talking about because according to the teachings of yoga and of India, that this world is composed of duality, of this physical world of light and darkness. So, and it's easy to see this in your own life. Something wonderful will happen, and then something terrible happens. And it's a kind of a repeating cycle. But what we're trying to do is to find a kind of light which doesn't have a polar opposite. So at the center of every atom of creation, there is a spark of God's consciousness, a spark of that light. And that's what the kind of light we're talking about, not just the light that can ever be diminished. And it says in the Bible, there's a light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness understandeth it not.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a light that is within each one of us and in everyone. And the lectures that we're giving, this tour on the West Coast, Choose the Light, is really saying seek the light. Find it within yourself and see it with other people, in other people, and try to really live that truth within yourself.
Well, now here's one of those age-old questions, philosophical questions regarding the light. Does this light reside in all people, regardless of their outward behavior? And I'm gonna be kind and put it in that context. And I could sit here and name different individuals, historical characters. You go, nah, and there's no way there could be light in that person.
Well, Yogananda first of all, yes, it resides in everyone because it is at the heart of every atom, and we're made up of basically that light. Yogananda had a beautiful statement. He said that a diamond can be buried in the ground, it can be covered by mud, it can be obscured so that you don't see the light reflected from it. But as soon as you wash off that outer aspect, at the heart of that big mud ball is that beautiful diamond. So at the heart of everyone is a beautiful soul that has been created by God. And then through behavior, through habits, through choices people make, maybe they have obscured that and thrown some mud over the beauty of their own soul. But nonetheless, it is there, and it is there in everyone.
Mm. And the great saints of the world can see that light. That's why Christ could say to Mary Magdalene, he could see the light in her, and he transformed her. He could there's so many examples of great saints of all religions being able to see someone who others would call a sinner and to say, no, there's light within that person. That person is a child of God, and that helps them to believe in themselves and to change.
You know, one of the things that I would truly love to do is to have the two of you on a regular basis to discuss a particular, shall we say, finer point, a particular message, if you will. Love to have you on, three or four times a year for that matter, and have one program just devoted to a particular subject, whether it's meditation, if we talked about Kriya Yoga, or if it was people, making those lifestyle changes, and again, I think there's a certain element of calling, but also of putting it out to the universe and saying, hey, I'm not real happy the way things are today. And I would like to be happy. And so I'd like to make some choices that would bring about that peacefulness and that happiness, and where I can see the light within myself, let alone within my fellow man, and those types of things. And if the two of you are open to doing something along those lines, I'd love for us to connect and put that something like that together.
We would love to do that. We enjoy these conversations with you, Richard.
Yeah, we're kind of on the same wavelength. It's just like talking to friends, so it would be very easy and enjoyable to do it.
So just a matter of syncing our schedules here.
Oh, well, I know we can do that too, and I'm very grateful for your time. And when you were on the program last time, of course, we ended the program with asking you those three questions, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to go to the program from June 25th, 2017, and listen to their responses to the three questions that I usually ask of you. And before I let you two go, I guarantee you that we will get together again, both in person as well as doing these types of programs on these respective subjects. If there is a particular, at this time, if there is a particular message, something that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I would say that right now is a time of testing on a planetary level. And it is during a time of testing, it's not a time to be passive. I would urge your listeners to act, but act not against something, act for something. Act in such a way that they expand and uplift their own consciousness and then work actively to help spread the light or be the change in the world, because the world desperately needs it.
And I would add just a few words, too. It's a time that we need to hold on to our hope and hold on to our faith. We've just celebrated throughout the West Easter, which really is an affirmation of the light and the spirit triumphing over darkness and hatred and violence and so forth. And so I think we need to hold on very strongly to a sense of hope, of faith, of trust in a greater reality, and then, as we've said, do everything we can to strengthen those qualities in the world.
I have to say I'm very fortunate in where I live, because not only do I have the opportunity of spending time in nature amongst the trees and all of the other creatures, but I also have the opportunity to spend time down by the ocean side and listening to the waves rush in and out and maybe catch a glimpse of the creatures of the water. And God, what an environment that must be like to live in. And at the same time, to have the opportunity to share this time with the two of you. And I'm quite grateful for the time that you've given us, and encourage people to investigate, to research. And that, of course, means that you need to go to, there are a number of websites that have been mentioned. Of course, they're on Facebook as well. Expanding Light Spiritual Retreats. You can also find out information online going to Ananda Village, ananda.org. You can also go to meditationpledge.com. And they can also get involved with, I guess it's your blog's A Touch of Light.
Oh, yes, we should have mentioned that. Yeah.
Yes.
We have a wonderful weekly blog called Touch of Light. And if you go to ananda.org, you can find out. But we have readers all over the world who really enjoy it. And it's very short. Jatish and I alternate writing it every week. And people get a lot out of it. So if you're interested, do subscribe.
Absolutely. Jyotishanddevi.org. That's JYOTISHANDDEVI.org. And we'll have the links to these various locations on the web as well at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So we encourage you to go there and click on those links, and it'll take you right to these different aspects. And there's just so much that we could continue talking about in addition to what we've already shared. And I am looking forward to our get-togethers again in the not-too-distant future to share on a very specific subject. And again, I thank the two of you for the time that you've shared with us here on the program.
Well, thank you too, Richard. It's been a joy.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.